And welcome, natural listeners, to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, naturopathic physician, herbalist, ethnobotanist, and professor at the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine. And we're here to bring you cutting-edge information on health, wellness, and issues in alternative medicine today with one of my special guests, a good friend of mine, Dr. Michael LaPelt, DDS, ND, licensed acupuncturist. Dr. LaPelt holds degrees in dentistry, acupuncture, and naturopathic medicine, and is the founder of Still Point Family Health Services, where he uses his own personal experience with healing, his connection with the land, and years of diverse training and experience in natural medicine to personalize solutions to support and assist your natural healing ability to achieve the health goals of you and your family. Now, Dr. LaPelt was led on a path to natural medicine 30 years ago after hurting his back in a bike accident, and he found no relief using conventional allopathic medicine, and this chronic pain interfered with his job as a dentist in Santa Rosa and hampered his lifestyle. Being a runner and athlete, he elected to forego surgery and started his own journey in natural medicine. And this is where he began to study many natural systems of medicine. And with the foundation of healthy diet and lifestyle, study of sustainable agriculture, he created Still Point Permaculture Center on his own 5 acres in Sonoma County. And he works there now. And our focus today is going to be on biological dentistry. And his website is Still Point Healthcare. That's one word. StillPointHealthcare.com. Welcome, Dr. Mike.
Well, welcome. It's so good to talk to you, Dr. Z.
Ah, great to hear you. And
hey, how's the weather out there? Is it let up a bit?
Oh, we were spanked by Mother Nature.
Oh, no. I hate to tell you what our weather's like out here, but we'll leave it at that.
Don't rub it in.
Yeah.
Close to 3 feet of snow, yeah.
Oh, my.
Anyway, so talk about back pain.
Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about, let me just go back a little bit, because, you know, we had you on the show a while back, so that's archived, by the way, folks, if you want to check. You can always go and go to PRN's archives and download the first show we did with Dr. LaPelt, which was a while ago, probably about 2008 or so, 9. But today we're going to focus not on as much on mercury like we covered in the last time, but more on biological dentistry. And so what is that all about? Why is the mouth so disconnected with the rest of the body? When people think that they have a problem in the mouth, they think it's just an isolated system and it doesn't really impact every system's in the body. How did that evolve, that thought process, Mike?
Well, that's a great question, and that's very true. We don't really listen to what's going on in our mouth until we have a problem with the tooth, and then it really speaks to us. But that being said, when we look at the mouth, it's really our first breath of life. And it's also our first stomach. It's an entryway to the digestive tract. And it's our first kind of relationship with food, and as we take food in the mouth, we're stimulating saliva production that creates a lot of enzymes and microorganisms that secrete acids to kill bad bugs and fungi and enzymes to help us pre-digest our food. So it really is important in terms of where we get our nourishment. That being said, when I look at the mouth, I'm really looking at the terrain, much like I do when I evaluate the digestive tract. And what I mean by that is there are certain basic parameters like pH, something called redox potential and resistivity that give us markers to the health of the terrain, which when it's balanced and healthy creates an ecology that's balanced and healthy, which then helps us break down foods and chase out the bad guys, etc. In addition, it's the first kind of filtering system. The tonsils in the back of the throat filter toxins, solvents that we ingest or we may breathe from the environment. And the sinuses act as filters for air. They all communicate, the nasal sinuses, the maxillary sinuses, the adenoids, the sphenoid. And the really powerful thing that's really come into understanding recently is the accessibility of sample materials for testing. And salivary samples are used a lot for testing endocrine balance or imbalance, from female hormones to adrenal hormones. It's also a great source for genomic testing with buccal cheek scrapings. It's a non-invasive way to access information for predictability and certain chronic illnesses that come up. And then lastly, which is really exciting, is it's a very accessible area for stem cells. And about 3 years ago, I ran across an article looking at where we can easily obtain stem cells. And one good source is in the mouth, where with just local anesthetic, you can access in old extraction sites, for example, where the wisdom teeth were, store the stem cells through cryotherapy and have accessibility to that later on in life. And there's actually a study that's been done on primates that used tooth stem cells to regenerate teeth. So it's kind of exciting the way things are moving. And because of the importance of these things in the mouth, the teeth, the jaws, the soft tissue, nature has provided one of the largest cranial nerves, called the trigeminal nerve, to control optimal function of the oral cavities. And it's the most densely packed neurons of any cranial nerve. So that's kind of the entree and overview of how much we can gain and glean from the mouth if we pay attention and look at it.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty, if the body invested so much time into our mouth as far as the neuroanatomy and things like that and the feelings, you would think that, you know, the creator would have designed us as just mastication devices and no feeling at all, and you just kind of, you know, chew your cud and swallow it. But, you know, you're right. The body invested a lot of time and energy into the mouth.
Yeah, and, you know, when you look at the ecology, it's much like the soil. As an organic farmer, I became interested in farming because as naturopathic physicians, we're, of course, trying to educate our patients around nutrition and where our food comes from. And it really led me to really study the soil and begin to understand how dynamic it is and how important it is to create nutritious foods. The same thing is happening in the mouth. If you really take a salivary sample, you can see that there are upwards to 50,000, sometimes into the millions of different microorganisms that live as one big happy family if that terrain is balanced. And these good guys, these probiotics, help us synthesize a number of enzymes and autoantibodies and neurotransmitters, and a lot of that begins in the mouth. And the probiotics really help us synthesize secretory IgA, which is that first line of protection that lines the mucosal tissue. So there's so much that I've learned through the years by studying agriculture and going back to the body. And you talked about, you know, the mouth as a source of food for nourishment through mastication. If you strip away the bones, the muscles and everything from our mouth to our anus, we're really an undulating earthworm. We do the same thing.
Pretty interesting, Mike.
it's kind of like the doctrine of signatures, you know.
Yeah.
It's undulating.
Yeah.
We have peristalsis in the gut. And that's really what's going on. And when you look at all the microorganisms in an earthworm, the enzymes, the acids that they secrete, from lactic acid to acetic acid, hydrogen peroxide, and, you know, the probiotics all help kill the good guys and generate production of the good, kill the bad guys and generate production of the good guys. So.
Well, that, you know, it's kind of interesting that you mentioned that about the ecology, because it seems like the thrust of dentistry, like allopathic medicine, is, you know, we have this age-old struggle of vitalism versus mechanism, where the vitalists believe we were dynamic, we had a vital force, we had self-healing capacity, we needed to work with nature, whereas the mechanists believe we need to control nature, we need to sterilize things, we need to use powerful substances and medications to kind of overpower nature versus working in conjunction. And this has led to a whole industry of dentrifices and other types of things which don't seem to perhaps be working as well for the health of our mouth and whole body.
It's absolutely correct. The mechanistic approach is a no-win situation, and it's not sustainable in terms of health. And I think we as naturopathic physicians understand that. And when I sit down with patients and talk about these things, they know it. They know it in their heart that it's about finding solutions and about balance, internal balance. And as you know, going back to ancient forms of medicine from Chinese medicine to Ayurvedic medicine, they were always looking at interrelationships and a systems model to really get to that end point of balance and optimal health. And that kind of leads me to, you know, how do I really assess in my practice oral health or get a sense of that? And through the years, I've really kind of broken it down to four major categories where when a patient comes in with a certain complaint, no matter what it is, it's unique to that person, I evaluate him from a structural perspective. So that may be, how is their bite? How is their jaw joint? Have they had any trauma to their mouth through accidents or ill-fitting appliances? What's their cranial bones? How are they moving? Are they stuck? Are they moving in balance? And what's their history around orthodontia? Did they have to have teeth taken out to move teeth in unnatural positions? And then I take a look at the soft tissue and how that impacts certain structures. If, for example, you have a spasm muscle, that can pull that cranial bone a little out of position. And when they aren't moving in balance, they're not recycling the cerebrospinal fluid from the brain down the spinal cord for nourishment for the neurologic system. So that's kind of the structural piece. And then I look at the mouth and the body as a biochemical, ecological terrain issue. And Dr. Pissinger, PhD in Germany, talked about the terrain, and he called it the connective tissue matrix. And if you think of a lake and our cells of our body floating in this lake, to get things to the cell and inside the cell, it needs to pass this fluid medium. And to get toxins out of the cell, it needs to pass through that. So he really spent time looking at that matrix to see what inhibits movement in and out. And it gets back to pH, this redox potential and resistivity. And I think most folks that are listening understand pH, but the ideal pH in the mouth is about 6.8, slightly acidic. And that's ideal to stimulate alpha amylase and the good bugs in the mouth to help us predigest our foods. And also, when you talk about redox potential, it's kind of like if you're in an oxidative condition in the mouth or in the body, it's like metal rusting on the outside. And that kind of stiffens function up, and that's not, of course, a good thing. And lastly, resistivity that he talked about is basically that fluid medium being stuck with toxins from metals, high-level EMS from galvanic conditions in the mouth from mixed metals, and that affects the ecology. Mm. And they want to live in harmony. So that's kind of the second piece. And then the third piece is looking at the emotional, spiritual. Because of the importance of the mouth, the impact of the trigeminal nerve on most of the functions of the mouth, stress can really affect, through the sympathetic nervous system, the movement of blood and therefore nutrients to the mouth. It slows that blood flow and causes imbalance in the production of neurotransmitters that begin in the mouth, their brain messengers. And it also triggers the trigeminal nerve, which gets overstimulated and produces, among other things, substance P, which is pro-inflammatory and sort of pain chemicals. So stress can be a tipping point not the only thing, but a tipping point for tooth gum and structural problems in the mouth. And then lastly, I evaluate from a perspective, environmental perspective, which looks at specific materials used in the mouth. And we talked about metals the last time we talked, mercury, but we use all kinds of different metals depending on what we're doing in dentistry, from nickel, titanium, bisphenol A. A lot of people are knowledgeable around that, that it's an endocrine disruptor that's been used in a lot of plastic fillings. And for some people, even gold. So what we do before they have replacement, say, of a mercury filling, we do what's called biocompatibility testing of dental materials. And there are three ways you could do that. You could do it through a blood test, and Clifford Laboratories does that. Neuroscience has a test called the MELISA test that looks at reactivity to gold. There's a subset of the population that's reactive to gold because it's not a pure alloy, it's mixed with other metals. And then lastly, electrodermal screening or Vega testing is another way. And I do that commonly in my office. I have local dentists that I work with. I have samples of their materials. Patient comes in, they sit down, and I test the materials on that patient through a biofeedback machine to give me an idea if it's compatible so that they don't have an inflammatory response to those materials. So those are the four major categories that I use for whomever walks in the office to get a sense of what's going on, not only in their mouth, but the rest of their body.
So again, structure, ecology, stress, and the environment. Let's backtrack and talk about stress a bit. Now, this is interesting because I know it ties into traditional Chinese medicine, which you're trained in, I know, and I have training in it as well. Stress, and go into the Chinese philosophy of the Jing and the kidney energy and what stress does to that and how that ties into the mouth.
Well, that's a great question, and how wise our ancients were. For example, you speak of the kidney qi, and if you want to translate it to the West, it's really looking at the psychoneuroimmunologic system. And when we're under stress, be it emotional, structural, biochemical, whatever, that's going to trigger a response from the adrenal glands to initially hypersecrete cortisol, which is an anti-stress hormone. And that's actually been found to really stimulate bone loss in the mouth. So what's interesting about that is when we look at periodontal disease in the mouth, it's a strong indication that there may be osteoporosis that follows. So if we really are keen about looking at these markers in the mouth, we can get a heads up on what may be going on in the future and be a little more proactive. But what I do when we assess and begin to bring the mouth back into balance, we're certainly evaluating their constitutional strength or their kidney qi strength. And that hypersecretion, as you well know, in the adrenal glands after a period of time, the adrenals get kind of tired out and they underproduce and fatigue sets in. A lot of other issues fall out of balance. The thyroid has to compensate. And this whole endocrine system is really strongly influenced by what we do in the mouth. The materials that we use, fluoride, for example, can inhibit production of thyroid hormone. Bisphenol A has been shown to really inhibit thyroid production. And actually, there are dental materials that we as consumers aren't educated about that really have an impact on the ecology and the health of the mouth. And a couple that the listening audience may have not have heard about are one is sodium lauryl sulfate and the other is triclosan. And there can be in, you know, good brands of materials. So I urge individuals when they're buying their toothpaste to, one, not use a fluoride toothpaste, and two, to avoid sodium lauryl sulfate, and three, triclosan, T-R-I-C-L-O-S-A-N. And so that's just one of many materials. And Listerine, there are a lot of toxic materials and that that really throw the mouth ecology out of balance. And then it has to struggle to come back, which requires energy and charges the adrenal glands that we talked about. And so the good news is the body in its wisdom has wonderful ways to re-equilibrate, and toxins that come into the mouth are filtered by the tonsils, they're filtered by the sinuses. However, when they do that over a period of time, they get congested. And one of the issues that is a high priority when we look in the mouth is chronic tonsillar infections. And we do, in a hierarchy, we start by assessing materials in the mouth, and then we look at old extraction sites that oftentimes create what are called cavitations, which I'll speak to a little bit later. Root canals are impact on the body, and those things really can put a lot of stress on the immune system, the adrenal glands. And what's really interesting, this HPA axis, the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, it becomes overcharged when that terrain gets out of balance and the pH is too acidic. When we're in an oxidative stress condition, we have these toxins, and it really excites and stimulates strep mutans, which is an organism that lives in the mouth. When it's in a balanced ecology, isn't a problem, but when it's in high populations, it tends to create acids, caries in teeth, irritate tonsillar tissue, different soft tissue. What's nice about it, there's a Ayurvedic herb called triphala that actually has been shown to really inhibit the reproduction of that strep mutans. And then keeping the ecology in a more alkaline state, eating a balanced diet, can really be helpful in that regard. And so you're right, Eugene, that the kidney chi or the immune system is constantly monitoring anything out of balance, and the mouth is challenging those adrenal glands every second.
So it's like it goes back and forth. The adrenals affect the mouth, and then the mouth affects the adrenals, and then that, would that be registered as like low testosterone in a man low estrogen in a lady, Mike?
Absolutely. And what's interesting, TMJ, for example, temporomandibular joint problems, which are quite common, we commonly see it more in females, and even in a higher percentage of females have had orthodontia that required extraction of teeth, so that teeth were moved in unnatural positions, and that changes what we call vertical dimension or chewing height, so they close later. That pushes the lower jaw more toward the back area, which impinges on that neural tissue, creating TMJ problems. And there's an estrogen component. We found that, you know, women produce higher concentrations of estrogen, and that tends to stimulate higher incidences of TMJ problems. So assessing, you know, our hormones, are they out of balance for our gender and our age, no matter what our age is really important in this process.
You mentioned bone loss and osteoporosis and how that's tied in with periodontal disease. Now, when we look at osteoporosis, most lay people and even allopathic physicians basically just think that that's a calcium deficiency or... And so they prescribe Tums or some knucklehead thing like that. But it's really complex because the matrix of our tissue, in say our bone, is both mineral and it's also living tissue, osteoblasts, osteoclasts. Can you talk a little bit about how periodontal issues may mirror osteoporotic issues?
Yeah, you know, basically periodontal disease is considered by dental definition gum and bone disease. And typically it starts with simple irritation of the gum tissue, chronic infection of the gums called gingivitis, and changing that localized ecology, creating a more acidic environment, which then kind of dissolves that organic matrix. In the very top of the bone surrounding the teeth, there's a cortical plate, and that it's thick, dense bone that acts as a protectant. But when you have an ecology change where you have pathogenic organisms that are anaerobes living without oxygen, creating more acid, that starts to break that down, and then there's softer medullary bone underneath that tends to retreat away faster. Mm. And you're right, it's a complex balance of turnover of minerals and organic matrices that are constantly in an ebb and flow. And really, that turnover of bone, when we do x-rays in the mouth, digital x-ray with low radiation, we do them once a year, mostly because if you're looking for changes, the bone turns over every year. Mm. So if you're doing month by month x-rays, you're not going to see very many changes, particularly to monitor your therapies. So there's so many issues that are dynamic that are interrelated to the mouth, its predigestion, and the gut, which helps us assimilate it and absorb, so we have the minerals and the organic matrix to create strong bone. And that gets back to the relationship of, you know, our gut and the mouth.
I mean,
a lot of the tissues that are in the gut and the microorganisms live in the mouth. And if we have imbalance in the gut where those little villi, those little fingertips on the lining of the mucosa and the beneficial forms aren't in contact to do that transformation of food to vitamins and minerals, we're going to be deficient.
Yeah, like then, if a patient has low stomach acid, for instance, they may not be able to extract the minerals from their food, even if it's good food there, and they may not be able to digest their protein and into the individual amino acids which are needed to build proper collagen. It's interesting how I've noticed that patients that have this osteoporosis and also have mouth issues, they're very low in things like glutamine, proline, lysine, glycine. These are the amino acids that build collagen or rebuild it. And so degeneration outpaces regeneration. You know, the body's trying to regenerate the bone and fight the bacteria and fight the focal infection, but it just doesn't have the resources to do so.
Absolutely. So you get into this condition of deficiency, and then you couple that with a toxic environment that's putting stress on the system for regeneration, and it's a downhill spiral. So the essence of whoever I see, for whatever reason, filters down to deficiency and toxicity and varying degrees in how we approach that for individuals. And that kind of brings me to kind of a unique quote that I heard just a few days ago. And so it goes something like, always remember you are unique, just like everybody else. You know, and that really speaks to our constitution and our physiology. So there is not one protocol or one way to treat imbalances in the body or the mouth for that matter, and that's why I assess in a functional, systematic way to individualize our assessment and then our treatment. So it's been fun, and I also wanted to kind of move into the area of focal infection.
Okay, so it's a good time. We have to take a break because it's close. So we're going to talk about, when we return, focal infections and how do we treat this non-allopathically. We already know, you know, Listerine and strong hydrogen peroxide and kind of what's done by more allopathically trained dentists. We'd like to hear your take on it, Dr. LaPelt, and how we can bring balance back to the mouth and talk about then, you know, tie it all together. So stay with us right here at the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You're listening to a wonderful program here with Dr. Mike LaPelt. We're going to take a break. Progressive Radio Network. And we're back with more of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we're going to continue our very scholarly, erudite discussion with Dr. Michael LaPelt, holistic dentist and naturopathic physician. And also he's interested in just living off the land and permaculture, which we'll talk about at the tail end. But let's get back to our discussion, Dr. LaPelt. Are you there?
I am.
Okay.
Thanks.
Let's talk about what creates these focal infections of the mouth and tie it into this whole root canal situation, which a lot of people, including myself, are kind of going through kind of right now and making supposedly, hopefully, good decisions with our body and making the right decisions.
Yeah, that's a great question, because there's a lot of controversy around focal infections. What do they actually mean? Are they real, etc.? Basically, what they are is any infection by any pathogen, be it bacterial, viral, spirochete, cell wall deficient organism, that location is in the mouth but can spread to a distant area of the body. And one good example are chronic tonsillar infections. There's a lot of evidence that looks at that terrain change, what organisms live there, and what you find in the heart. And there's been a lot of research done currently, but interestingly enough, this was done in the 50s and 60s by a doctor called E.C. Rosenau and Associates. And there is a manual out by S. Hale Shakeman, S-H-A-K-M-A-N, at the Institute of Science. And he looked at the oral ecology and influences on diseases in the body. In a sense, was talking about focal infections and the distant manifestation of that. And he has some 200 disease processes that he really found started in the mouth and created problems in other parts of the body, from allergies to cholecystitis to lupus to rheumatoid arthritis to pyelonephritis to pneumonia to mono to multiple sclerosis to mumps, embolisms. The list goes on and on. So
now, is that available? Is that available, Dr. LaPelt, for listeners?
I think it, the last I saw Shakeman, it was at the American Academy of Biological Dentistry a few years back, and he went back to the research and made it available at the website. I think it's, I haven't checked it recently, but it's called theinstituteofscience.com.
Okay.
And Shakeman took Rosenau's information. So it's really interesting to look at those connections, and it's just, you know, this was looked at before. It's not something new. If we go back to the Chinese medical model, they looked at tooth-organ relationships. So, for example, if a tooth had an infection, they found that that affected the distant organ that lay on that meridian associated with that tooth. And in the mouth, each tooth is associated with a specific meridian or energy channel that moves to a distant organ. So they described that 3,000 years ago, and then in the 60s, the Germans looked at it, and they started doing biopsy samples of infected areas in the jaws. And then this was done on primates, and then they biopsied that organ associated with that tooth and found the same organisms living in the area and the same degrees of infection. So they saw that cause and effect.
That's scary.
And so it's really fascinating. Yeah. And you know, the tonsillar thing that I think even cardiologists know a bit about, of, you know, if you have periodontal disease, you got to get that under, you know, control, or you're a little more susceptible to heart problems. And in addition, if we look at different materials in the mouth, this galvanic impact, or the EMS from dissimilar metals, this current flying around, creates a galvanic foci. And they found that it doesn't necessarily create symptoms in the localized area, but often there's referred pain to distant parts of the body on the same side of the body. So,
and I know when, they found that they found the big, you know, discovery recently. I know I lectured on this when I went out to San Diego, and saw you last time in the summer was the discovery of the P. gingivalis, that particular bacteria, and it's when they looked at the molecular configuration of some of the enzymes put out by this bug, it was it matched our body, and it created some type of an autoimmune disease through molecular mimicry. So otherwise, the bug kind of looked like the Matrix, and the body, in its attempt to get rid of the bug, did collateral damage to the Matrix, and then that can spread and cause rheumatoid arthritis. And this is like one of the leading theories. Like you said, it's rehashing old information, but it's quite fascinating that there's a strong link between periodontal disease and RA.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, another really good example that a lot of people know about is gluten and the protein gliadin. And that actually acts as a molecular mimic to certain neurotransmitters. And there's some fascinating information on that. It's just starting to come out, looking at how our reactivity to that gluten protein not only inhibits IgA production, that protective film in the mouth and the gut, but also mimics other neurotransmitters and disturbs that balance. So it's, these connections go on, and I think the long and short of it is that we are interconnected. And even though, you know, we can't assume that the teeth are inert until they hurt us, because they're chalked or enamel, et cetera, but they're live living structures that are remodeling. Every year, all that material is pretty new. And so, you know, in the focal infection idea, the other two areas that we touched on briefly, one are root canals and the second are cavitations. And bone cavitations are, as the name implies, it's a cavity in the bone. And that they really come about by lack of blood supply. It starves the bone, can't get its nutrition and food, so you get necrosis or death of the cells, the bony cells. And there's a name in oral pathology circles called NICO, neuralgia-inducing cavitational osteonecrosis. And that big, long word just means that the bone is dead, it's a source of chronic infection, it tends to be a magnet for pathogens and solvents and metals, and it's a huge problem, which then we see distant ramifications of that. So the most common reasons for the focal infections, just to kind of quickly go over that again, are post-extraction sites, where the extraction, the periodontal ligament wasn't removed, so it creates a physical barrier for blood supply. Root canals, basically, they're a dead tooth in a living system, and at the bottom of the root canal tooth, there tends to be a small cavitation and this kind of ebb and flow. Again, if the constitution is strong, it can accommodate root canals. But when it weakens, priorities shift, and then that root canal can have an impact in its specific location and that specific associated organ. And then one thing that I really see that really is a common problem is blood flow and coagulation and viscosity issues. And
hello. Looks like we lost Dr. LaPelt, so maybe the engineer could put something on, and we'll see if we can get him back for the rest of the program. You're listening to Progressive Radio Network, Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We'll be right with you.
sorry about that. In our high-tech world, we got knocked off.
Okay. So, continue on there.
Yeah. So, again, back to these focal infections in the mouth and the most common reasons for them. That leads me to, well, how do we diagnose these cavitations in the mouth or the health of a particular root canal and how the body's accommodating?
Yeah, and also give the listeners like some options about, like, so say the dentist finds that you have a, you know, some type of an abscess happening and says, okay, you have an option of taking the tooth out or getting a root canal, and you're trying to balance out those options. What would you do if you were in those situations?
Sure. And I commonly have patients come in time and time again with that same conundrum, or what do I do?
Yeah.
And so first we diagnose it, and it's done commonly with a digital 3D cone beam x-ray or a Panorex x-ray that sweeps the teeth and jaws, or what's called a periapical x-ray that zooms in on the bottom of a specific tooth in question, or biofeedback through electrodermal screening. But the options when somebody comes in with that choice of they have an abscess in the tooth, what I like to do with these particular x-rays is get an idea of what the extent of that is. And I kind of put them in categories of mild, moderate, and severe. Then I want to look at their constitution and that distant organ associated with that area involved to see if that's compromised. So if they have, you know, it's on a back tooth, which is associated with digestion, and their digestion is out of balance, that's another reason to be more aggressive sooner than later in terms of treating the tooth. And so once we do that, then the options pretty much are, if it's a mild infection, I can commonly use what are called biological injections and laser treatment to stimulate die-off of the pathogens in the area, change the pH and the ecology, and actually stimulate osteoblastic activity to regrow bone around the bottom of the tooth. So there's a way to keep the tooth in the mouth without having to take it out or do a root canal. So that's kind of in the mild state. If they're, the example I gave you, their digestion associated with that tooth is well, relatively balanced, that's a good sign. I think that the body's compensating and we can do that conservative treatment.
What about the front bottom teeth?
The front bottom tooth is associated with kidney bladder or the immune system.
Okay.
And, you know, structurally the low back and the knees.
Yeah.
And so it's really an issue of, if those adrenal glands are pretty shot, the patient's pretty fatigued, and they have an abscess in the tooth, you know, the choice is pretty much extraction or root canal. So we have to make a choice about what makes more sense. If there is an issue with cancer in the family, or the individual I'm seeing has cancer, then I'm not a real advocate of recommending root canals. And I say that because of Dr. Issels. He was an oncologist in Germany for 50 years, internationally known, lived to 95, treated cancer successfully. He would not treat his cancer patients who had root canals.
Wow.
And he would recommend taking them out in a very strategic way. And that doesn't mean that that needs to be done for everybody. Everybody's an individual. If they have a strong constitution, you know, I tell them that every year when you have a recall, let's test that root canal tooth to see how your body's accommodating. And I do that through my electrodermal screening, or you can do a sample of what's called crevicular fluid that seeps up from the gum tissue from the root that will give you an idea of the ecology at the base of that root canal tooth. So Dr. Boyd Haley at University of Kentucky developed this test because his grandson got really sick after having a root canal after traumatizing the tooth from a bicycle fall, and they went all over the place and couldn't find any treatments that were helping him, and found a biological dentist, and he said, you know, it's that tooth. And they said, well, I don't think so. And so they kind of went on their own way and ended up, out of desperation, coming back. And the dentist took it out in a biological way, supported it, and his symptoms really resolved. So
amazing.
All cases aren't that linear, of course, but we have to look at what's going on in the mouth.
Hey, you know, Benjamin Rush, I read something interesting that you like, Dr. LaPelle. Benjamin Rush cured a man of rheumatoid arthritis in the 1700s when he removed his infected tooth, and he wrote about it. So
yeah,
it's pretty amazing, and it just goes to show everything that you're saying is true. So now... Okay, so now the person has, maybe they have a bad root canal, and you feel that their symptoms are associated with this problem. Is there a way to change the ecology of that bad root canal from leaching the toxins into the adjacent and systemic tissue?
There is, and again, it's unique and individual, but we have to work constitutionally. So, you know, get balance from a naturopathic perspective so that they have the adaptive range to accommodate that tooth that's a non-living tooth and considered sort of foreign in a living environment. So that being said, that always has to be done. But the other piece of it is if, you know, it's really stressing their immune system and they're not accommodating, then the choices for that root canal are injecting with biological remedies and laser to kind of buy some time, but ultimately we're looking at extracting that tooth, and that brings me to how do we do that.
Okay.
It's not a simple thing to go in and just snatch a tooth out. We need to do it biologically, in my view, and that is when you take a tooth out, you want to curette the socket out completely so that you take the periodontal ligament out, and that's a ligament that attaches to the root to act as a suspensory ligament, so with compressive forces that tooth will move up and down and it won't fracture in micro amounts. So you need to get that out so blood flow goes to that socket to create healthy bone following that.
They usually and don't do that as a regular...
It's not, you know, it's not typically done.
Okay,
if
well,
I take the tooth out, let the clot form, end of story, and we found that there's higher incidences of cavitations forming if you don't clean it out appropriately.
Oh, okay.
And so when we do it, I have the oral surgeon do that, and I send him biological remedies that he injects into the surgical site. He will take, before he does that, he'll take a tissue sample of any infected bone, send it to me in physiologic saline, and I'll make a isonosode, a homeopathic that's imprinting the uniqueness of that individual, and we'll prescribe that to them and do postoperatively a laser treatment to encourage microcirculation and lymph drainage. So that, all in the attempt to create healthy bone to fill in that socket, so that you don't have a cavitation, a source of low-level chronic infection.
You can use, how about using some of the bone morphogenic proteins to reestablish healthy bone healing and things like that? I know there's been some research on that. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of research on osseous implants, and it depends on the size of the tooth. If it's a back tooth with multiple roots, there's a bigger area that you need to address, so sometimes that's needed to create a matrix to stimulate the bone. But the core issue is getting blood supply to the area. So if they have thick blood before they have this done, I have them on, you know, essential fatty acids, CoQ10, maybe ginkgo biloba, natokinase, lumbokinase 1, or a couple of those to keep the blood thin so it's getting in these micro vessels to get to the site to create healthy bone. So let's say we take the tooth out. What are your options then? We always look ahead, and we don't just send them off and have a tooth taken out and not give them options of what they do to replace that space, because
right,
that's important. So if you take a tooth out, you have three options. If you have teeth on either side of that, you can do a fixed bridge. You can do a removable partial denture that comes in and out, or you can do an implant. Now, implants are controversial. I think they're improving. Historically, titanium was the only one available, and there may be some issues with that, certainly galvanic, electromagnetic issues. But they now have a zirconium one that is more akin to the bony structure and non-metal that looks very promising. It has carbon matrices in it, so it allows it to flex. It's not stiff. In the early days, they were fracturing because they were just basically compacted glass. But so those are the options. And actually, the fourth option I think that we'll see not too far down the road is stem cell implants. which you saved, you know, from the side of your wisdom teeth when you were 18. It's in a bank. You lose a tooth. You take it out. You curet it out. Get good blood supply, and you stuff in some stem cells and watch a tooth grow.
Wow.
So I think that's what we have to look forward to.
Oh, that's exciting. So.
Yeah.
Tell us a little of some resources, because we have about 5 minutes left in the program.
Yeah,
like resources,
that's
and let's just tie it all together. We talked about some fascinating stuff, that's for sure.
Yeah. So.
And where do people begin? Like, they may live in, you know, a pretty rural place and may not have access to a biological dentist. Where are some good resources that perhaps people can search for?
That's a great question. I'll give you some organizations that are a great place to start. And one on the top of the list is the International Association of Oral Medicine and Toxicology and .org. So it's IAOMT.org. And I'll give you the phone number. It's area code 863-420-6373. And they have listed biological dentists by region.
Okay.
And like all of us as individuals, biological dentists comes in many shades, but they know about all these things. It's not like, you know, you're going to talk to somebody that is in denial and going to say, oh, you're nuts. They know a lot of and most everything that I've talked about. So that's one great resource. The other one is the International Academy of Biological Dentistry and Medicine. And its acronym is IABD, D as in David, M.org. Phone number 281-651-1745. And it's another great organization. And thirdly, there's a Holistic Dental Association. .org. It's just holisticdental.org. And their phone number is 303-356-7338. And then DAMS, which is Dental Amalgam Mercury Syndrome. It's just amalgam.org. You can check that online. And then some ancillary things that are really good informational sites are the westonprice.org. Association. That's great information in terms of ecology and food-based probiotics, etc. And in terms of the metal testing, there's a company called Quicksilver Scientific, and they do a tri-test with hair, blood, and urine to really evaluate different types of mercury in the body. And that's unique because it hasn't been done before. Most diagnoses are based on inorganic mercury, and they test for elemental mercury and organic mercury and inorganic mercury, each of which lands in a different area of the body and have different effects. So it's a great informational site. I know Mercola did an interview with Dr. Shade, who is the CEO of Quicksilver Scientific. And then lastly, that I just quickly want to talk about is Dental DNA. And it's a company that my oral surgeon uses, and when he does an extraction and cleans out a cavitation, if it's really toxic, he'll send a biopsy sample to this organization, and they check it for pathogens, and they relate it to organs that have a high propensity for being affected by that particular organ. And so it's really a fascinating thing that brings back that tooth-organ relationship and the pathogen connection.
Now, folks can get in contact with you, and maybe you can act as like a quarterback for them and maybe coordinate and speak to their dentist or speak to some other people on their behalf, you know, folks listening out there perhaps.
I do it all the time. So have them contact stillpointhealthcare.com, and my phone number is there, but just really quickly, it's area code 707-829-2737, and often I do second opinions. I have patients send a digital x-ray. I look at that, do a phone consultation, get a history, and start to talk about what the priorities are in the mouth. If it's metals, is it cavitations, is it root canals, is it bone gum disease, is it constitutional, and give patients guidance and priorities and what to do.
Great. Well, thanks. Again, that's stillpointhealthcare.com. Dr. LaPelt, it's been just an amazing conversation. This is certainly one that we will have to archive and save for people to listen to for many, many years to come. We really appreciate your expertise, knowledge, and passion for what you do.
Well, that's really kind of you, and Dr. Z, I'm looking forward to see you down in Jamaica at your Eco Tours for Cures.
Yeah, we'll have a nice time.
Sounds
and that
great.
Does it for another edition of Natural Alternative. This is Dr. Z saying goodbye, and stay healthy, folks. Bye-bye.